Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Our very special guest today is a very talented lady. She's mostly known for her singing, but she's quite the artist as well. Quite the painter, I should say. Sophie B. Hawkins. Sophie, how are you?
Hi, everybody. How are you?
Good. How much of your time do you spend painting?
I only paint in segments of my life, like after I finish a cycle of songs, then I reward myself by painting. I wish I could paint all the time, but songwriting, when I start songwriting, that takes all my focus. And you know I'm a mother, too.
So that, yes.
You know, when I'm not taking care of Dashiell, my art is what I do. And luckily, he's almost six, so he's in school a lot and has play dates, et cetera. So I paint after a cycle of songs, and sometimes I look forward to, say, when I'm 60 and I can paint all the time, I'm hoping.
Now, you mentioned Dashiell. How much of your career does he know? I mean, he's almost six, but that's still a little young. He knows you're a little different than most moms, right?
He does, and he can't, like, for instance, I'm actually amazed how much he enjoys aspects of my career. Like I had a show, not last night, but the night before, and he said on the way to school, can I come to your show tonight? And I said, oh, well, it starts at your bedtime. And then he's trying to convince me. He said, well, what's the first song you're going to sing? And I said, California, Here I Come. And then he started singing California, Here I Come, really the exact melody, and I couldn't believe he knew the song. So in other words, Frank, he's so much more aware than I know about my career. And he's very cute. He loves my rehearsals. He loves my musicians. He's not, you know, he's very independent, and he does his own work. He does not want to be a musician, but he does appreciate what I do, I think. And also, I wrote a musical with his class last year, the kindergarten class. Yeah, it was fascinating. We wrote three whole songs and a mini play, and we performed it. It was a 10-minute musical with five-year-olds, and I actually put it up on Facebook. Well, we're going to continue working on that this year, and he's very excited about the musical. So I think what he likes is when he can be involved, he likes it. When he's not involved, he hates it. Like if I say I have a show, he says, don't rub it in. But if he can come to the show, he likes that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Do the parents in the class understand what that means? And I know it's a kindergarten class, and we're not going to make too much of it. But to have Sophie B. Hawkins write a musical for their kids to participate in, I mean, did the parents get that?
Yeah, they were beyond, and the school and the teachers, they couldn't believe, first of all, that I could do it with their kids, because nobody can see how great their kids are when they're at home. But, you know, when the kids get away from the parents, they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
And talent. And so, first of all, that I wanted to do it was shocking to everybody. And I wanted to do it in part because I wanted to, you know, we had just moved back to New York from California. Dashiell was really upset about moving from California. He was born in California. I was born in New York. So I wanted to do as much as I could with his school to make him feel integrated and excited. But anyways, they couldn't believe that I was going to do it. They could not believe it. And then when we did it, they were over the moon because it was really good. And the kids actually did write the songs with me. I didn't sit there and hand them songs at all.
Mm, that's great. That's terrific. You're giving back. And also, I mean, you have no idea what kind of effect that could have, say, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, with, you know, one of the little girls or little boys in that class. I mean, it's tremendous. And, you know, someday somebody will be interviewing them, and they're going to say, hey, Sophie B. Hawkins did a play for my kindergarten. People are going to be like, you got to be kidding. that's a great thing. It's a great thing to pay forward.
That's right. And, you know, the kids, that's why I'm saying the kids they love me on such a deep level because we worked together. It's the same way I love my musicians or love my writing partners. It's a special love you can never have with a wife or a husband or anything. It's an artistic, creative love. So when they come up, so that's why I just said, let's just keep going this year. Let's do it as an after school at my apartment. And the mothers, again, they're all helping to organize this. And we're actually going to continue it. And the kids, they can't, I can't tell you what it means. I agree with you. They recognize it is what I'm trying to say. They recognize it.
Well, Let me remind everyone, I'm going to take this opportunity to remind everyone that this is Frank McKay, and more importantly, I'm speaking to the wonderfully talented Sophie B. Hawkins, who's also, most importantly, a mom to Dashiell.
Yes.
Great name, by the way.
Thanks.
What's his complete name? Dashiell
Dashiell Jack Hawkins.
Jack Hawkins. Very nice. Very nice. It's any reason for Dashiell?
Yes, because when I was pregnant, I was reading a lot of Lillian Hellman, and I saw a documentary and on Lillian Hellman, and I was really amazed, and I loved Dashiell Hammett, the writer, and I was amazed how he loved her. And they weren't ever married, but he really nurtured her talent. Of course, they fought a lot. They were on and off for probably 40 years of their life, but I think she was his great love. But what I loved is the way Dashiell Hammett loved art and loved women, and he nurtured both. So I thought, if Dashiell, if this kid inside me, who I knew was a boy, if he can love women the way Dashiell Hammett loved Lillian Hellman, then that would be great. So I named him Dashiell.
And that's the first thing I thought when I saw your son's name was Dashiell. I thought Dashiell Hammett. That's it was the first thing. But let's do a little bit of history, if you don't mind. You originally came from New York City, right? You were born in New York City. And you grew up, for the most part, in or around New York City?
Totally, in Manhattan. I never left we went away for summers to Long Island for the first part of my life. And then in the later part of my life, we never went away, never went to Europe, never even went to restaurants, which I didn't mind. I grew up in Manhattan my whole life till I was 31 or something. And then, of course, you know, in the meantime of that, I was signed to Sony and I did world tours, so I traveled a lot. And then at some point I moved to California I didn't want to move to California, but I did.
Well, you made a big jump there. We kind of went from birth to Sony real quick. But what about the first time you discovered singing? What's the first time you could remember singing and realizing that people were reacting to it in a positive way?
Yeah, I can remember because first of all, I was a drummer. And it took me, it felt like my whole life to be able to get to play drums. Finally, when I was 14 years old, I found a drum teacher, and it was African drums. And what I wanted was to play African drums. So I found a drum teacher when I was 14, which, by the way, seemed a little late. You know, most kids started music earlier, especially in Manhattan. But I had a hard time getting to it for several reasons, and they don't really matter now. So I found my teacher. And I didn't know ever that I was going to be a singer. I was a drummer. I wanted to be the greatest drummer, then vibraphone player, marimba player, jazz, classical, you name it. Got into Manhattan School of Music, went for about, I guess, two-thirds of a year, and I sat in the dictation room where they have these little piano rooms, and I was practicing dictation, which is a class in music, I put my hands on the piano, and I just started, crying, because I felt that that's what I should be doing, is playing this piano and singing. And I had no concept of even what that meant. But I really stopped. I think I left Manhattan School of Music immediately almost and started writing songs. It was as if it was a hidden thing inside of me that only could have come out through my path of drumming. And so, when I knew it affected people was I started to do everything I could to record the songs that I was writing, and I noticed people loved my voice, and I didn't intend for them to love my voice. I just wanted to write the song and give it to other people, but they did react to my voice, and then I had an incredible love of singing because I was getting to express myself, and that meant more than anything to me, and it still does. When I sing, it is incredibly cathartic.
When you mentioned like cubicles and piano and writing songs for other people, I kind of think Carole King. Was that crossing your mind? Was she crossing your mind at all?
Yes, I loved her. And I studied all the great songwriters, especially songwriters like Carole King. Yeah, exactly. That's what I wanted to do, write songs as great as her.
Yeah, now, you were in Manhattan, and you decide that you're going to play the drums, which certainly isn't the most practical situation. Again, I wasn't there, so I don't know what your practice situation was. But where do you practice African
drums? Oh, terrible. Oh, my God. First of all, when I went from African drums to drum set, which was pretty quickly, and I got my drums from a drum set from a guy named David in Harlem, you should have seen or heard my father when I brought them into the house. And they were, you know, he was like, she's wasting all her time. She's making all this noise. She's never going to be a drummer. Why do we have to put up with this? I practiced. I annoyed everyone in the building, but I wouldn't stop. I was a maniac. When I finally got to music, I was a maniac. And that week, I would wake up at 4 in the morning to practice. I just destroyed everyone's eardrums. That's how I was. I was totally selfish. And then when I was carrying my drum set, you know, down into the subway, the A train, and just going all over Brooklyn and Queens to play, to audition for bands and play gigs at CBGBs and anywhere, Bleecker, what was it called, the Bitter End of Bleecker Street.
Yeah.
I carried my drums everywhere, and it was hysterical, because looking back on it, I was this skinny white girl with a giant trap set, carrying it down piece by piece down the subway stairs. I was unstoppable.
That's great. Well, it's determination. I mean, you're showing some real determination, and that should have been a sign for your parents to jump behind. What about your mom? How was she responding to this?
I think she thought it was probably fascinating, but see, they didn't have a reference point. Nobody was a musician. Nobody was a professional artist. They didn't have a reference point for all this stuff. You know, we weren't Jewish. We were like this kind of family where culturally we didn't have any sense of that. Although my mother is a writer and she was a published novelist, but that's writing. And I also think her family probably was totally mean to her for being a writer, so she probably unconsciously translated that to me.
What did your dad do?
He was a lawyer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see him thinking that this was completely impractical. And
yes, but he was impractical too, mind you, in the best way. See, in a way, what it was I was so much like them that they resisted it. That's really the truth about it. I was exactly like my father, I found out way later in life, had wanted to play drums in college, but he was pushed into law. He hated law, so he, you know, did other things to compensate for his unhappiness. He stopped working at a certain point, really, really, when I was young, and he was completely miserable as a lawyer, and he was a genius. In other words, like, I articulated what they all wanted to do, but they had come from really backgrounds that were unsupportive.
Let me remind people that just may be tuning in or turning on their radios now that this is Frank McKay, and my very special guest is Sophie B. Hawkins, and she is, as everyone knows, a wonderful singer, but also a wonderful painter. And it sounds like a wonderful mother. It sounds like that's your passion at this point.
It is. You know, and this is so funny, Frank. I so want to have another child. And it's, again, I am so impractical. Nothing about me is practical. I wish that I would just so focus on my career and not ever think of it. But I do. I love being a mother beyond anything.
I don't know that that's impractical to want a second child. What would Dashiell think of a second baby? He would like this?
It's funny. I'm going back and forth and back and forth about it. I think that, of course, he would miss me doting on him because he's really my main, you can tell he's my main focus in life since the moment he came out. So I think he would miss that. But on the other hand, how special would it be to have a sibling who adored him and looked up to him, and then when he's my age, to be able to turn to somebody? Because I don't think friends are as important. I mean, maybe it's the rare family where your brother and sister really hate you for your whole life. I mean, that can happen for periods and years, but usually around when people get into their 40s, they start realizing how they love their siblings and need each other. Like, for instance, you know, I went through a horrible breakup recently. My sister is the most important thing to me, and my brother, and my mother. And my brother, the same thing, went through a divorce. So I'm thinking of his future, so he'll hate me for a while, just like he hates me for moving him from California. But then there's going to be a point where he realizes that there's nothing could replace a sibling. That's what I would think. What do you think?
Well, I have four kids, and trust me, you know, they'll get over the jealousy, and they'll enjoy and not enjoy some that comes with it. But at the end of the day, it's more fulfilling than
See, that's
than
what I'm trying
freedom.
To think. And, And some only children, they say, oh, I love being an only children, but I love being an only child. But then usually they also say, but I don't like to share, and I'm not really good in relationships. All these things that I don't want. And also the thing is about Dashiell is that, well, I'm not saying I can do this because it's really impractical for me to be a single mother and also with this crazy music business and reinventing myself, trying to put out a new album and then getting pregnant. That's totally impractical, but I still want to do it.
Yeah, well, certainly you have a fan base, but you have a different type of music business now. And
yes.
And people are figuring out how to do well with it. And you're someone that you've never been the type to go along with what the record company demanded. Anyway, so this may be a perfect time for you. The timing may be, you may be blessed by timing and the fact that you have the freedom to release your own music without the pressures coming and, you know, this one telling you don't put a banjo in or don't do this or whatever.
Right.
You know, you're very independent. I mean, you have a very, and I'm just meeting you now for the first time, but your whole career, you've been independent. Your whole life, it sounds like you've been independent.
Yes.
So, you know, you may be able to take advantage of the fact that that it's easier to get singles out, and you know, recording isn't so complicated because of Pro Tools or whatever the hell. Do you have a setup at home? Do you have like a Pro Tools?
Yes, no, you're right. The recording is the easiest part, and I do have my Pro Tools. You know what I also noticed, Frank? On the show Monday night, my new songs hit the best. Like usually, I've never had that experience before, where I do a show and the new songs usually they take a while. They take, you know, I have to release them first, and then. But these ones, no one had ever heard the new songs, and I'd say the four new songs that I put in the show, they have such a great reaction. Oh my goodness! And I thought to myself, well, see, what I'm trying to do now is get a residency in New York where I play once a month. And I actually went to a club yesterday. I don't want to say it now. Well, I am.
Sure.
It's at Rockwood Music Hall. I went down there, and we were talking about, you know, the first show in December. And I want to do once a month because I have a musical that I wrote, and I'm continuing to write. I have all these new songs. I have so much to do. And I thought, wow, if I play once a month, I could even record that. You're right. I don't want to be in any kind of box. I've never been in a box. So maybe you're correct about that.
I speak to so many people that that have had success but haven't had the success that you have, don't have the name recognition that you have. And some of them have really figured out how to make more money. And again, that's a dirty word, money or whatever, but let's face it. I mean, you need it to, to feed the family and all. But people have figured out how to make more money putting out their own releases through iTunes and through, you know, Amazon or whatever than they did through the major labels. And I don't want to out anybody, you know, specifically because I'm saying you've had a much better career than them. But there are people out there doing very well doing it on their own, and they love it. And they wouldn't take a label if a label came begging them to do it.
Yeah, no, I think those people are really brilliant. And I think I'm a little bit bad at that, only in the sense that and it doesn't have to be that I will continue to be bad at it, but one thing that I haven't been able to harness as well as I could is the internet, because I don't go online enough. It's just not my nature to be, I'm never on the phone and I'm never online, because if I'm not playing with Dashiell or doing his homework with him or taking him to and from something, I would really love to be playing the piano or painting or doing something, and it's the last thing I want to do is be networking. But I have to get over that, because I'm realizing that, not that I'm realizing now, I've always realized that is the nexus, as they say, to success. I have to do it much more.
Yeah, well, if you wait a couple of years, Dashiell will teach you how to master the internet. I'm sure he'll probably.
I know. It's so funny. But, you know, it's not even that I don't know, Frank. It's that I don't want to put in the time, because I always think my time is better spent writing, reading, and writing a song. You know, it's just a mindset. Some people absolutely love being on the internet. I have never liked it that much.
You know, there are people that I refer to as keyboard commandos, people that just kind of lay back and they love the internet and they'll do it all day long. And I'm sure that there are Sophie B. Hawkins fans listening to us as we speak here, but certainly in your network that would love to take on that responsibility. By the way, we're coming up on a break. Do I have you for a second segment?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to remind everyone that we have about a minute left in this segment with Sophie B. Hawkins. This is Frank McKay, and I'm thrilled to be speaking to her. She is a unique talent, that's for sure. She's got a voice of gold, but a very talented songwriter, very talented artist, and sounds like a very talented mother. You get it. You know, you get where this is, and this is about him, and it's not about just you and whatever. It just sounds like you get it. So congratulations on that. Give us a website that people can check you out on.
Oh, SophieBHawkins.com.
All right, that's easy enough. SophieBHawkins.com. And if some of her fans out there want to jump on and start promoting her on the internet, you just heard that she can't stand the internet. So not a bad thing. Contact her through SophieBHawkins.com. We're going to take a quick break again. This is Frank McKay. We'll be right back with Sophie B. Hawkins. I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. It's my privilege to be speaking to one of the wonderful singers out there, and she is born and bred in New York City, and as you heard earlier, she spent most of her life there until she moved out to California. Sophie B. Hawkins is my special guest. I'm Frank McKay, and Sophie, you mentioned the musical that you're working on. Is it a finished product, or is it something that you're kind of a work in progress?
Well, it's definitely not finished, because until it goes up, I don't think any musical is finished. I mean, until after previews. But it's an incredible. I even did some songs from it at the show Monday night, and I realized how much I love and miss working on it. But I'm not the only writer. In that version of it, I was the composer songwriter, and there was two book writers. But
yeah,
I'm by no means the only writer, so I can't control the path of it. So what I'm actually doing is, I'm going to start performing the songs that I've written for that musical, and I'm going to look for book writers for other ideas for musicals that I have. You know, I had told my fans that I wrote this story, and a long story about this character, Jack Blue Mountain, and I really want to get that out, too. But the thing is, I have to get my album songs out first, and I wanted that to be a musical as well, not only a story for, I guess, from 6 to 12-year-old, actually the adults like it the best. But the point of the matter is I have a lot of material for different musicals, so I consider them all works in progress until they're produced and done and selling tickets.
Now, when you got out of the Manhattan School of Music, where did you go from there? What did you do? Were you waiting on tables?
All of it. I was waiting on tables. My favorite gig, well, first of all, I was playing drums with a band called the Pink Men. They had a lot of gigs around town. And, by the way, some of those band members, they own bars around New York, Del Pedro, really great songwriters. So I was a drummer. Then I played with Brian Ferry as a percussionist. I got fired.
Wow.
I was a coat check. My favorite job was a coat check. And I loved the job so much. And this should teach everyone about appreciating where you are. I loved my job as a coat check so much that I would look forward to going there. I read Anna Karenina and War and Peace because I had 6 hours to just take people's coats and then at the end of the night give them back to them. So I got to read. Well, guess what happened during that job? And I loved the job itself. I was discovered as a coat check. I was in Orso, a New York theater restaurant on 46th Street. I was checking everyone's coat, and this guy named Mark Cohen, the singer of Walking in Memphis, writer of Walking in Memphis, he came in and he fell in love with my speaking voice. Because I checked his coat. What is the great speaking voice you have? And he said, I bet you're a singer. And I said, I'm a terrible singer, but I'm a songwriter. And then he wanted to hear my demos, so I handed him a demo tape of like 50 songs. And he left it. He was a jingle singer at the time at JSM Commercial Studios. So he left the demo tape on the counter at his next job the next day, and somebody picked it up, heard Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover, California, Here I Come, Mysteries, heard all those songs, and his name was Ralph Shuckett, and he was just a piano player on a session of a jingle, and he called me up and he said, you've got to be making records, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm co-checking and writing songs. So that's how it happened. I was literally discovered in one of my jobs, and I didn't even want that job to end.
Were you singing on the demo?
Yeah, of course. I was thinking of playing all the instruments like I always do.
Yeah, what made you think that you were a terrible singer? I mean, people are cringing when you say that. I mean, because you know how many people have good voices and they don't have your voice, and they just heard you say that. What makes you? What made you think that? Where did that insecurity come from with your voice?
Well, I guess because I wasn't trained, and I hear singers like, I don't know, Mahalia Jackson, and I feel I could never sing like that, or just all the great singers who are so trained and have such massive voices, big voices with vibrato. You know, I have an expressive voice, yes, but it's not a big voice, and I don't have any vibrato. I'm not a real singer. I'm just somebody who needs to sing.
Yeah, that's amazing that you're saying that. I mean, that's you've got a great voice, and you use it well. I mean, just there's very few Mahalia Jacksons. In fact, there was one Mahalia Jackson, right? So, I mean, that's amazing that people put that kind of pressure on themselves. Let me remind everyone that this is Frank McKay, and I am speaking to Sophie B. Hawkins, a wonderful singer with a great voice, and the mother of Dasho, most importantly, the mother of Dasho, and it sounds like he's in good hands. And the name of the musical that you're working on, Sophie?
Oh, I'm not allowed to say it.
Okay.
But if people come to see me at Rockwood Music Hall, it's going to be December and probably January and on and on. I get to tell a few stories of just the songs I wrote for it. So that's the best I can do right now.
All right. Well, hey, listen, not bad. How big a production is it? Can you say how many people are going to be involved in this?
Oh, I have no idea. So far, there's I really have no idea. I can name you the characters, but it would take quite a bit, you know, like three. I can't. It's so. I mean, it had some really big people who did the reading.
What's your most immediate project right now?
Project is, because this is interesting you asked me that. If you had asked me that a month and a half ago, I would have said my book, turning that into a musical, getting a team around that, and getting that produced, and to keep writing songs. But it switched focus because some people got interested in putting out a record for me. And I realized, why am I switching to musicals right now? I have these songs that are that my fan base really can relate to and that are great songs. And then I started writing more and more, just writing, but not for a show, but for me, for Sophie B. Hawkins, the artist who always wrote songs. I went back to doing that. And then I loved the songs that started coming out a month ago. And I put them in the show on Monday night. And I really said, I'm focusing on getting, if it's not an album out, then it's something. Because like what I mean by that is usually I do an 11 or 12 song album with extra songs. And nowadays, basically what I should focus on is a single, a video that goes with the single, and then however else I get the rest of the songs over time, because that's quite a commitment to get even a single anyways on the radio. So that's what I'm most focused on now. And I will be playing those songs live, and I will be recording them not just as demos, because now they're demos, but they're getting a lot of great attention, my new songs, as a singer-songwriter, Sophie. And now I'm going to get those out. Much more focused than I was before about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, you're doing a lot. I mean, you're a single mom, and that's, you know, everyone who's doing, I was raised by a single mom.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey,
sorry, my assistant walked in.
That's okay. Let me just mark the time here. All right, good. It's interesting that you're getting anything done as a single mom. I mean, that's, I give, you know, tons of credit to single moms that are juggling everything. My mom was a single mom, a single divorced mom, and you know, she got things done, but, you know, certainly, you know, she didn't have a, you know, she had a more stable career as a nurse, and I can imagine if she was in the business, you know, in the music business. It's almost a rhetorical question, but do you like the business?
Yes, I do, because it makes me be a better artist, because it throws me challenges all the time. And like it throws wrenches at you, but you got to deal with them, and dealing with them makes you come up. Necessity is the mother of invention. That is really true. So I could say I don't like it, but that wouldn't make any sense, because it actually makes me keep producing and makes me get out there and makes me reach for things I would never reach for if I was just totally, you know, sitting back and and enjoying, I don't know what.
Yeah.
Business is all of our, everyone, I mean, in all careers, the business is a creative monster that we all have to deal with. But it is creative, and it seems like it's just this corporate horrible thing, and it is. But if we can find a creative way to harness, you talked about this with, you know, certain artists, and, you know, you look at the internet, that's a creative solution to so many problems. And so that's my answer is yes,
yeah.
I do like it. I like it the way I like, if I like it the way I like bad weather. You have to handle it.
No, that's interesting. Well, that's interesting. No, that's certainly interesting. I know it would certainly be a rhetorical question to ask you whether you haven't liked it at times, and I'm sure you haven't.
Oh, of course. I mean, but that's the same thing is, but for someone like me whose nature is to just sit in the house and write songs, it's really important to be shocked out of my comfortable place.
Well, let's jump a little bit into, you know, back into, you mentioned Mark Cohen. Do you keep in touch with Mark Cohen?
I should. I just don't have time to keep in touch with anybody, so I just wait till people, I see them on the street or something happens, and then we're friends again. I'm sure if we saw each other, it would be as if, you know, as if no time had passed.
Yeah. Now, this, when you met him as a Kochek girl and he you exchanged demos, basically, had he already written or performed Walking in Memphis?
No, he hadn't.
Oh, wow. So that was early. This is, you know, this was early in his career, or at least
yes,
before that big
hit.
Yes,
he may have written it, but I wouldn't have known that he wrote it. Nobody
right.
would have known that he wrote it. He was a jingle singer. But that's to his testament that he could recognize me, recognize my talent without having become who he was. That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'm going to remind everyone at this point that this is Frank McCain. We have a few more minutes with Sophie B. Hawkins, and again, she's just a wonderful singer, as everyone knows, and a songwriter, and an artist, a painter. Do you have any idea of how many paintings you've actually produced? Do you keep track?
Probably. I mean, close to 100, probably. But I really want to do many more before I have a show. I've been offered to have a show, but I think that I should wait. I want to wait until I have a lot more.
How many of these do you still own?
I own all of them. I haven't sold any of them.
By choice, you haven't? You haven't tried to, right?
I don't want to. No, people have offered money, but I don't want to. I don't want to sell them.
Yeah, you're possessive. You're possessive of your
work. No, I just think I don't think I'm possessive. I think I haven't developed it. Like, I mean, songs I've developed and I've proven. I think painting is something that it will take more paintings to really. And then once I have much more material, I know what I'm doing and what I'm representing. I think right now it's just enjoying painting, and I think that's a beautiful place to be too.
Yeah, right.
You know, if I was going to suddenly become a professional painter, that would put a whole lot of pressure, and then I'd have to be in the art world, which is so yucky.
You know, I don't know whether I know for sure if there are covers of any of your hits out there. Have people covered your hits?
No. Well, they have on YouTube, but not really. And I think that's crazy that they haven't. But I think that there will be. I'm pretty sure there will be.
Yeah. And you haven't done much writing for other people. It was mainly for you.
I've tried to.
Yeah. Well, what did I say? Listen, you have material out there that's just out there. How many songs have you recorded? Do you have a statistic on that?
Oh, my God. Including all my demos? I mean,
yeah, well, I mean,
hundreds
how many?
And hundreds.
Yeah, I mean, you got hundreds and hundreds.
I mean, I do so many a year.
What percentage
So few of them make it on records.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, what percentage of that are available to the public?
Well, not as many as I record, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that I hold back until I know something is great, that I think is, and I will probably always be that way. And then if someone gets a hold of my catalog and wants to release it because I don't care anymore, they can have a party with it.
Right. That's interesting. You know, it's interesting that you said record, and you know, I wonder, I say record all the time, it's just a habit. But, you know, I wonder if it is record anymore. And, you know, if that's the way people that are just coming into the business now and doing well with it, if that's the way people look at it, that they're recording.
I don't even look at it that way. Frank, you know what? I don't even look at it that way. When I get into somebody's car and I want to hear what they're listening to, and it's even people my age and even people older who grew up on records, it's song by song. And but the thing is, you know, I think every artist will probably tend to think in cycle of songs, because a cycle does represent a period of life.
Right.
Right now, my songs are representing this period of life, and they represent a cycle to me. But, yeah, you're right. If you can get one song out there, it's pretty much a miracle, because it takes so much effort without the support of a record company, which record companies don't even exist anymore the same way as we know. So how you get it out there is anybody's guess, and you just keep trying to do it in these different ways. But I think that, yeah, records don't matter anymore, but still – one likes to sell records at concerts with beautiful artwork, because people still do buy them, and they do represent the artist. They represent the artist's endeavor.
I actually miss the 12-inch, you know, where you could actually look at an album cover and kind of read it while you're listening to it and examine it. I miss that, and I know I'm probably in the minority. I don't think people actually, even by the time you were releasing your early hits, CDs were the norm, and vinyl was really out. Did any of your stuff make it on vinyl, or did you miss that?
Oh, every single record has been on vinyl, even the last one.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, well, vinyl has made a comeback, and people are enjoying vinyl more and more. But I think of it more of as a novelty. I don't have a record player, and I love vinyl.
I love vinyl, but one thing people don't have is the time and the space anymore, and that could change.
Yeah, I mean, especially city dwellers, you have more of that. For example, and again, he might be a little too young for it, but the young people, and, you know, I've got four kids, they don't even play CDs. I mean, they have iPods, and that's what they have. And they download, hopefully legally, download music, and we've always been big on that. And that's the type of thing where there's a double-edged sword, where you've probably lost a fortune on illegal downloads over the years, but at the same time, you get an opportunity not to go into a $200 an hour studio. You can, you know, record a, you know, a hit record or a hit song, whatever, at home, and, you know, and that's the good part. And I think also you get to promote it online. I mean, there's only two major labels out there, and I mean it's such a departure from where it was in the 90s. And when you were on Sony and people like Mariah Carey were you know, breaking through, and you know, Mark Cohen, you mentioned him. Well, it's a whole different world. That doesn't exist anymore. It just simply doesn't. Let me remind everyone that this is Frank McKay, and my special guest is Sophie B. Hawkins. Sophie, we've got about 3 minutes left. Can you give your website again?
It's SophieBHawkins.com.
SophieBHawkins.com. And is there anything you could tell us about the book? Do you have an expectation of when the book would be out?
No, but it's a fiction book and with amazing characters. And I don't have an expectation, because I don't want to just throw it out there. I think the thing that one is, there's a thread here, is that even though I do produce a lot of material and work a lot, I don't just put things out. And I think that's the expectation on the, because of the internet, that people just throw things out there when they're done, and I'm never going to be like that. I keep coming back to things. I keep working on things, and in that sense, that's just the kind of artist I am. I don't have a need to get instant recognition. My need is to make things that are truly great and stand the test of time, and I think that's why my singles are still supporting me, and they're still played all over the world, because I really, really didn't want to throw things out there to get instant popularity. And so the book, I could have released it, I think, a year and a half ago. But then I said, I want to come back to this. I want to look at it from another approach. What if I made this into a musical? And then I had an editor who had all these notes, and I took in the notes, and then I realized the notes were very limited. So I have a process with things, Rangan. But I have put a lot of material out there. I do have 7 albums out there, and there are videos, and there are, like, lots of things people can find on YouTube. So it's not like there's a dearth. But I'm also not always constantly trying to stay on the cutting edge, because I feel I am my own cutting edge, you know?
Yeah, let me switch gears for a second. And you did a great version of I Want You by Bob Dylan. Did you get to spend much time with Dylan?
No time at all. I just saw him at his concert when I played Madison Square Garden, and I heard he said that I was really great, and I shook his hand. That's it.
Yeah, oh, that's it. Yeah, I mean, he's...
That was enough.
I mean, that's a while ago now at that point. I mean, my God, that was 30 years as a musician, Bob Dylan, and that was 20-something years ago. I mean, you know, he's certainly made his impact. And by the way, so have you. You've made a great impact, and you're having a great career, and you take a little time out to do the important things in life, and that's raise a kid. And I think it's great that you're even considering having a second one. And again, you can't necessarily choose the sex of the baby, but I guess privately you might be thinking little girl, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That's funny. That's cute.
Yeah, if you have one of everything they make, you don't need anything else. So, look, Sophie, we got about 30 seconds left. I'm going to remind everybody that SophieBHawkins.com is where you could follow her. And
Twitter, the real Sophie B.
All right. Is there a fake Sophie B out there?
There's a lot of fake Sophie Bs, but there is a real one, and that's me, the real Sophie B.
All right. Well, we're thrilled to be talking to the real Sophie B. This is Frank McKay. Sophie, thank you very much, very much for being here with us. And let's follow up after the musical's out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I want to thank everyone for listening. Sophie B. Hawkins, the very talented Sophie B. Hawkins, has been our guest. And I've been thrilled to speak to her. Go to SophieBHawkins.com and check out everything you need to know. And look out for her musical and any new music she's got coming out. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.